The rematch is on. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett easily won the Democratic gubernatorial primary on Tuesday and vowed to end the ideological civil war in Wisconsin that he says Governor Walker started with his divisive policies.
In difficult times, we do not need a leader who will divide us. We need a leader who will bring us together. And that is the leader I will be.
Governor Walker also won his Republican challenge in the primary. He said he would move the state forward.
Do we go back to the days of double-digit tax increases, $1 billion budget deficits, a record job loss? Or do we take the positive foundation that we've built together to move Wisconsin forward?
This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, May the 11th. We will talk about the recall election stage being set. And we will also talk about news from the presidential campaign trail, including the comments this week from President Obama approving of gay marriage. And we welcome your comments on the issues of the news this week. We also invite you to introduce a topic to our discussion at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guests this week are Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Chris Lotto, former Communications Director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about the recall stage being set. It's going to be a rematch. The rematch is on. And your takeaway from the election results, Chris Lotto.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway, the indicator of what's going to come here is the level of support for Governor Walker on Tuesday. You know, there was no compelling reason for Republicans to turn out in droves this week. There was no highly organized get out the vote effort. And yet folks did turn out to support Scott Walker. In fact, there were more Republicans voting for Scott Walker than the number that voted in the contested GOP gubernatorial primary 2 years ago, when Republicans had a reason to go to the polls. In fact, we've since seen that it's the most votes that a candidate for governor has collected in Wisconsin in 60 years. That was reported this week by the Journal Sentinel. You know, Scott Walker did face a token kind of joke challenger this week, and Scott Walker obviously creamed him. So, you know, what does this tell us? It tells us the Republican base is fired up. This is going to be a rerun of 2010 in every sense of that term. The polling that we've seen to date suggests that it's going to be a tight race, but, you know, they're giving the edge to Walker. The latest poll this week was Rasmussen, which showed Scott Walker with a 5-point lead over Tom Barrett. You know, the problem for Tom Barrett is that he really lacks a compelling message other than, you know, I'm not Scott Walker. I mean, we've heard, you know, Barrett's positions just a year and a half ago. He doesn't have much of a record to run on as Milwaukee's mayor, and he has to crank up a get-out-the-vote effort in record time to make sure that every possible supporter of his gets to the polls, and they only have a few weeks to do it. You know, Walker, in contrast, does have the resources to win. You know, there's no question that the Republicans that are heading to Green Bay this weekend for the state convention, in what may be record numbers for their convention, I don't know that they've seen numbers that are apparently going to be this big. You know, they're ready to end this perpetual recall cycle once and for all. I think there are a lot of other folks throughout the state who are sick of this as well and are ready to cast a vote for Scott Walker on June 5th.
And Ed Filone, your takeaway from the primary election?
I'm not entirely surprised that Chris is ready to call the recall election already. I think that, you know, more votes were cast in favor of Democratic candidates than in favor of Scott Walker. So I think the clear poll that is reflective of what's going on in the state was the Marquette Law School poll, not to plug my employer, but that showed basically a tie. This is a very closely divided, evenly divided electorate, and it is very much, I think, a referendum on Scott Walker himself, and I think that that's more than enough reason to generate a great deal of opposition on to the governor's policies. That is the issue, I think Barrett is fully embracing it, and if it turns into a referendum on Walker, I think that's the most dangerous issue for the governor. I think, you know, really what is interesting to me is that win or lose, the recall initiative has actually been very successful. What it did is it forced Walker to move to the middle midway through his term, when I'm sure he would have preferred another year or more to push a further right agenda. He had to move to the middle. There were certain social issues that were put on the back burner in order to get through the recall. And now, once the recall election is over, even if Walker survives, he's got a very short period of time before he faces the voters again. So it's going to moderate him, and I think that's really the great benefit of the recall provision in the state constitution. Is it is a check, it is a moderator, and it does prevent a governor from running too far to one side of the political spectrum, and the voters basically force them back to the middle.
Let's talk about a story we just heard in state news. A filmmaker released a video yesterday that shows Governor Walker saying he would use divide and conquer as a strategy against unions. He was talking to a Beloit business person, a campaign contributor, Diane Hendricks, who was meeting with Governor Walker. This was, I believe, very early in his term, on just before he introduced the Act 10 or budget repair bill. Let's take a listen to Governor Walker in this video.
Any chance we'll ever get to be a completely red state and work on these unions?
Oh, yeah.
And become a right to work?
Well, in fact, the
what
big thing
we do to help you?
Well, we're going to start in a couple weeks with our budget adjustment bill. The first step is, we're going to deal with collective bargaining for all public employee unions,
right?
Because you divide and conquer.
So, Ed Filon, what do you make of that?
Well, I think, you know, I live in Milwaukee County, and I think for many of us here, this is no surprise. I mean, there's no shock that Walker would govern in a way that favors the interests of one group of constituents over another. That's sort of what happened here in Milwaukee County. It was always amazing to me. I would wonder why he wanted the job if he seemed to actively oppose many of his own constituents. I think the video, to my mind, is a bit of a sideshow. I mean, if it gets spun into this debate over right to work and whether or not there's too much union influence in politics, and if it gets turned into an abstract argument, Governor Walker's going to get over this hurdle. But if it focuses on Walker himself as a candidate and governor and his political style and the buyer's remorse that a great deal of the state feels over his election, if the focus maintains on Walker's style, his way of doing business, then I think it does reinforce many of the reasons why people support the recall.
And let me take a call before we get Chris Lotto's response. Art in Milwaukee wants to talk about that video, too. Hi, Art.
Hi. Well, here's the disturbing thing about the video. First of all, this is January 18, so it's almost a month before he introduces his Act 10 on collective bargaining. So he's got a plan there that he will talk to his billionaire friend about that he doesn't make public until 5 days before he expects the thing on his desk. Secondly, the divide and conquer, he basically considers half the state to be his enemy. And she says, can we make this a completely red state? And he excitedly breaks in and says, oh, yeah. And then says, we're going to go after all collective bargaining for all public employees. So he tactically retreated to remove the police and the firefighters, but that was his intention. And her question is to go after the unions. And so he says, we'll use divide and conquer. And first step is we're going to go after public sector public bargaining. So, you know, Tom Barrett's theme, I think, is exactly right, that we need to have the state somewhat back to normalcy. And what Scott Walker is doing is trying to divide the state and really have a war on half the people in the state.
Mm-hmm. Chris Lotto?
Well, I mean, I appreciate those comments. I realize that Democrats and unions are going to, you know, pick through this video like it's the Zapruder film, and that's fine. I have read the story. I've watched the clip. I cannot see the significance of this tape, and I don't think it's going to move anybody. For Democrats, it's going to be, see, we told you all along, this is what he wants to do. He wants to split up the state. You know, I look at this and say, well, you know, he did what he said he was going to do in terms of collective bargaining. We all know the results of what happened, and I don't see how some video is going to move anybody. You know, talking about the broader picture of union influence in Wisconsin, you know, we saw this week, you know, with Kathy Falk, You know, several unions put all their chips on Kathy Falk to win, to the tune of millions, several millions of dollars. You know, and for all that cash, Kathy Falk was, you know, blown out of the water by nearly two dozen points. And I don't know how much of that defeat was due to anti-union sentiment, you know, discord in the Democrat ranks, you know, how much of it was due to Kathy Falk's lack of statewide appeal. You know, the unions bet on the wrong horse. It's going to be interesting to see how, to what degree the unions are going to pony up again to support Barrett. But, you know, this video is I think, much ado about nothing at the end of the day. I mean, I think we can talk about the policy that was enacted and how everybody behaved, you know, as a result of that. That got us supposedly, you know, to the point where we are today. But, you know, the other interesting thing is Kathy Falk, you know, in running pledged to veto any budget bill that did not contain a repeal of the collective bargaining changes. And she lost by two dozen points. So I'm questioning really how important it is to the general population. Tom Barrett refused to commit to that. A number of Democrats think that that went too far. So, you know, I think this is much ado about nothing.
All right. Well, Ed Flone, what about the influence or power of union backing based on the election results?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Chris is doing his best job to diminish the influence of unions here. I think it really, the Falk versus Barrett campaigns really came down to the fact that in Milwaukee County, Tom Barrett has a great deal of support, and always, you know, it was a sort of pregnant wait in Milwaukee County. Was Tom going to get in the race? And Milwaukee County is extremely populous, and it was a little surprising to me that Barrett defeated Falk by the margin he did back in Dane County. But overall, I think what the Democrats did and what the vote demonstrates is that the Democrats went to the candidate that they thought had the best chance of succeeding against Scott Walker, and it shows the Democrats have one priority, which is defeating Scott Walker. Kathleen Falk ran a great campaign. She's a real class act. She has a lot of respect by Democrats. There is no discord in the Democratic ranks. There's a remarkable unity of purpose, and that's one accomplishment Scott Walker has. He has unified the Democrats.
Well, there will be two debates in the race for governor, apparently. Tom Barrett challenged the governor to four, and I believe the governor accepted two of them. Are the debates going to make a difference in this race, a race like this, Ed Flone?
Well, I think, you know, we do have a very divided electorate. They're very firm in their feelings on this. It's a very small pool of undecided voters. I think, however, that the debates are a wild card. The Republican presidential primaries showed that debates can move large numbers of people, at least for a brief period of time. And I think to the extent that one of the candidates makes a mistake or scores a decisive win in a debate, that might have an influence. But on the other hand, if they battle it out and both seem to do well, then it's not going to change anything. I think they're just a wild card.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I don't see them necessarily moving anybody unless one candidate makes a massive error, and I mean massive, and that is highly unlikely at this point. I mean, I think both sides have their, you know, talking points down, and it's going to be tough to trip them up. You know, I think that there's some discussion over whether two debates is enough. I mean, I think it is, considering what a compressed time frame we're talking about here. Again, we have 3.5. You know, weeks to go until Election Day. And besides, if people want to get a flavor for where Tom Barrett's at, they can just dig out the coverage from 18 months ago and they'll be all set.
We are talking with Chris Lotto and Ed Flone during this edition of our Week in Review. We welcome your input as we discuss the top state, national, and international news stories of the week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ed Flone and Chris Lotto. We are focusing now on state politics and the upcoming recall election on June the 5th. We will also talk about news from the presidential campaign trail as well, coming up a little bit later in the program. Frank in Black River Falls is with us now. Hi, Frank.
Hello, ma'am. Thank you for taking my phone call. I want to start off by saying that I was a registered Democrat until 2008, and for the last 4 years, what I've seen is the Democratic Party at the state level and the national level do is enough to make steer me more toward the Republican Party. I support Governor Walker. I believe that this recall election should just be done with so Wisconsin can move forward. I also believe it's pretty hypocritical in regards to the earlier calls and earlier statements about that tape that was found of him divided and conquered. I think it's pretty hypocritical that the Democrats are accusing the Republicans of doing that. And I agree with that one gentleman's comment. I believe this tape's going to go nowhere.
All right. So
I just don't believe...
What is it, Frank, about... You said that you were a registered Democrat and now you support Governor Walker. What is it that turned you off from the Democrats?
Well, I believe that Governor Walker, like some of the other Republican governors throughout the country, they're doing what they're saying they're doing. They have to fix budgets. They have to get deficits taken care of. And in order to do that, you got to make tough decisions.
Yeah, so Ed Filone, what do you think of that?
Well, this is a very divided state, and I think that the theme that the Republicans have been pushing is that, Walker came in, there was a fiscal emergency, he did what was necessary to fix the emergency. The Democrats don't believe there really was an emergency. They think it was ginned up. We have, the recent announcement now that the administration thinks it has balanced the budget or closed the budget deficit, and then you look at the details and you see that really what they did is they just delayed making payments, so they're paying less now. They're going to make those payments in the future. It balances the books today, at least on a cash basis, not under generally accepted accounting principles. It may balance the books today, but it pushes the payments down the road when they'll be more expensive. So, I think it's a real question. What do you believe? Do you really believe there was a crisis and that Walker took the necessary decisions? He claims he did, and that's the message they keep trumpeting. Or do you think there was no crisis and that the supposed fix is just a lot of smoke and mirrors? That's what the Democrats believe.
Mm-hmm. Chris Lotto, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, bravo to the caller from Black River Falls, and I look forward to seeing him at the convention in Green Bay this weekend. I wanted to say hello to him. This is a study in contrast, and that's what this election boils down to. The question now becomes, it's incumbent on Tom Barrett to say, okay, Tom, how would you address the budget situation? How would you balance the budget? How would you make sure that that going forward, we have a climate in this state that's going to be, favorable to job creation, one that helps Wisconsin with its economic recovery? What is your plan? Scott Walker has put all his cards on the table, literally. You know where the guy is at with this. He's put forth a budget. He has put forth a plan to reduce spending, to get the collective bargaining under control, which again was the reason why we were all as part of this, taking part in this recall in the first place. So Tom Barrett has to lay out a plan here. And we'll see how much he's willing to put on the table before the election. I think that the battle lines are pretty clearly drawn. I do feel good after Tuesday about where things are at for Scott Walker. I think turnout is indicative of that. No amount of Democrat spinning is going to make me feel any less good about it. I think this video really does nothing to further the debate. I think for Democrats, it just solidifies the position that they already had about Scott Walker. Nothing was going to change their minds about him, and this video does nothing to push that either way.
Yeah. Does Mayor Barrett have to put out a plan, Ed Filone?
Well, I think what Barrett's approach is not to attempt to deal with reducing spending by putting all the burden of the spending cuts on one segment of the state population. And I think that that's really the key. I mean, budgets are a list of priorities, and they reflect priorities. And that's really the purpose of making a budget, is to force you to make priorities. And so, when you engage in a budgeting process and you recognize that there have to be spending cuts, but you focus those cuts on one segment, and then you focus those cuts on your political opponents, people who weren't going to support you politically anyway, that reflects a certain set of priorities. And so I think all that Barrett has to do is say, look, my priorities are different. We're going to deal with the budget responsibly, but there's going to be shared sacrifice. Everyone is going to be a participant in the recovery of the state, and we're not going to force one segment of the population to bear a disproportionate burden.
You know, there, the governor's race wasn't the only recall vote this week. There were primaries in four Senate districts. Four Republican senators are targeted for recall, and there were Democratic primaries due to the protest candidates or fake Democrats that were also on the ballot. Do you think, Ed Falone, that Democrats will pick up any Senate seats next month?
Well, I'm not as familiar with the demographics of all the Senate districts, and I'm certainly not going to make a prediction. I do think that the Senate races are very important, and perhaps more important than the gubernatorial recall. Again, it's a question of checks and balances. I look at the last legislative session, and to my mind, the last legislative session was a huge waste of time and money. And what was really needed is a Senate that acts independently of the governor, acts as a check on some of the worst impulses coming out of that office. And so I think it is going to be key if the Democrats can pick up one or two of these Senate seats so that you can have a legislature that doesn't just rubber stamp what comes out of the governor's office, but actually helps the governor moderate positions and perhaps gets some things passed that are more appealing to the majority of the state.
And how are you feeling about the Senate recall elections, Chris Lotto?
A little less thrilled than I am feeling about the gubernatorial race right now. I mean, I think that there haven't been any polls for a few weeks, but I think the last major set of polls were done by PPP, which is a Democrat leaning pollster. They did indicate that all four Republicans would lead in the matchup, although in one case the margin was razor thin, and I have a feeling that that's where this is going to go, that we could see a Democrat pickup of one, possibly two, and right now we're evenly divided in the Senate at 16-16, so it could mean that that control of the Senate swings over to the Democrats. I'm sure there'll be more numbers coming out here in the next few weeks, and we'll get a better picture of what's going on. But I do think there is a danger there that Senate control at least could end up with the Democrats after June 5th.
Just an FYI, we do have invitations out to all the candidates in the Senate races to join us for candidate forums week after next, the whole week of the 21st of May. We have the 7 o'clock hour devoted to Senate candidate forums. Ben Marins will put out invites to the candidates for governor and lieutenant governor. So we'll be providing those candidate forums again before the recall. You know, there's one other news item that I wanted to talk to both of you about that might have some influence on the recall race. A judge granted immunity to a 12th witness in the ongoing John Doe investigation of Governor Walker's staff from his days as Milwaukee County executive. Is this investigation going to affect the recall race, Ed Falone?
On the John Doe investigation, I want to say that I think John Chisholm has run a scrupulous investigation and should be commended. There have been no leaks, no heavy-handed tactics. I practiced in white-collar crime defense, and I teach in the area, and I think he's really just done a textbook job of investigating. I don't think anything will happen between now and the election. I think Chisholm will avoid filing any charges. We're too close to the election. So I'm not sure that there will be any event related to the John Doe investigation that will come out. However, Chisholm is behaving as if the investigation's ongoing. He's behaving as if there will be additional criminal charges down the road, whether against Governor Walker or against someone else in the future. It's hard to know because there's no leak, so you don't know where they're going. So I don't expect anything to happen that might influence the recall, but I would expect there to be other shoes dropping in the weeks or months afterwards.
Yeah, but before we get to Chris Lotto to respond, Ed Falone, Mayor Barrett continues to call on Governor Walker to explain why he has a legal defense fund set up for this John Doe investigation, because apparently you should be the target of the investigation in order to have one of those things.
No, I mean, it's just sort of laughable. I mean, clearly Scott Walker is a subject of the investigation, which means at least he's a subject. A subject means that you're more than a witness. Depending on where the investigation goes, you might turn into a target, but as of right now, you're a subject of interest. And so, yes, Scott Walker is potentially under fire depending on what comes out. And so he is entitled to set up a legal defense fund, and it's a bit comical that he tries to bend over and do these contortions to deny that he is in fact a subject of the investigation. I think everyone who knows anything about white collar crime knows he is.
Chris Lotto.
Well, it's really hard to dive into any real detailed analysis of any of this because, you know, we really don't know exactly what's going on in this investigation. To Ed's point, you know, they've kept a tight lid on things. So, you know, for Tom Barrett to come out and say, oh, explain the legal defense fund. Well, it's a John Doe. He's retained legal counsel. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just trying to, you know, an attempt to smear Scott Walker and all this. And that's fine. That's politics. But, you know, we're only getting pieces here and there over what the investigation is really focusing on. We're seeing individuals getting charged with individual crimes. We can't conclude that Scott Walker is ever actually going to face any charges. I mean, this is an ongoing investigation. His campaign and Walker himself have insisted that he's not a target. We have to wait and see where the investigation goes. I think it's kind of pointless to speculate beyond wondering, you know, whether there's any political angle. You know, Ed said a minute ago, well, you know, he doesn't think there are going to be any charges filed before June 5th. I mean, I think that's good because that's one of the things that concerns me is that there's going to be some sort of, you know, October surprise coming prior to next month's election. And that would lend credence to the idea that this is really a big political witch hunt. You know, that's time to impact the election. And time will tell. And I hope Ed's right about that.
Well, one other story before we move on to national issues. The Department of Natural Resources is getting some criticism over the last couple of weeks with critics saying they're not doing enough enforcement of pollution laws. A story in the Wisconsin State Journal this weekend suggests that political influence may have led to minimal enforcement on a company that spread human waste in three times the allowable limits on their land. Is the DNR too lax or too politicized, as critics are saying, Chris Lotto?
Well, first, to be clear, it's not a question of approving of what the waste hauler did. I can't imagine that anybody would approve of it, and that includes, you know, Democrats and Republicans. I think the question becomes the degree of punishment that's being meted out here. Democrats obviously think the punishment didn't go far enough, that the $750 in campaign contributions that this waste hauler gave a former legislator was enough to buy this waste hauler a slap on the wrist. Frankly, if we were to examine all the examples of perceived favorable treatment related to campaign contributions, Wisconsin government would have to be shut down. I mean, that goes for both sides. So I think it's virtually impossible to draw a conclusion here. I do think it's significant that a state ethics administrator concluded that there was no ethics code violation here to the point about campaign contributions. So I think at this point, Democrats calling for hearings is a little more than chest thumping.
What do you think, Ed Filon?
Well, I think most voters in the state want to see a state government where there is a clear separation between politics and policy, where policy is made and enforced for, you know, the good of the state and not for political reasons. Now, you know, is this DNR example evidence that the politics has infused policy at the DNR? I think there are, you know, people who have been unhappy with the way DNR has been run who feel that it's been run on a political basis. I think there are people who look at other offices in state government and feel that it seems to be driven by politics and not by policy. Should people be concerned? Yeah, people should be concerned, but I don't think there's any smoking gun yet that I've seen in the media. I think it's just simply one more instance where many people in the state are suspicious as to is state government being run for the interests of the people of the state, or is it being run for the interests of advancing the governor?
Talking with Ed Filon, who is an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and Chris Lotto, who is former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. We are reviewing the news of the week, and let's turn to national issues. Arguably, the biggest national news story of the week was President Obama coming out in favor of gay marriage this week, becoming the first sitting president to do so. How significant is this, Ed Filon?
Well, you know, let me just say that it's a big deal,
nationally and in the history of our country for a sitting president to make that statement. But I've been teaching constitutional law for about 15 years, and 15 years ago, my class, there would be a spirited discussion among the students on gay marriage. You know, this year, I tried to get them to debate the issue, and they looked at me like I was crazy. They just said, well, why does anyone care about this? And I think that that's really, to my mind, the biggest evidence that the society has moved on this issue. And increasingly, the young really don't care. And so we've reached a tipping point, to my mind, where greater acceptance is going to come. And whether it comes in, you know, a year, 5 years, 10 years, it's coming. And so really what Obama did is simply say that he's recognized this and that he's going to stand on the side of what's coming. And he's not going to try to drag his feet, and he's not going to try and use the federal government, at least under his administration, to prevent this natural change from occurring. So in the great scheme of things, I don't think there'll be any immediate impact, but I think it's just further evidence of this incredible shift in the public thinking on this issue.
Chris Latto?
Well, it is historic. I mean, Obama is the first sitting president to embrace gay marriage. The cynical among us might say this is timed quite effectively in election year to appeal to certain voting blocks, young voters in particular. You know, especially considering it came just one day after a same-sex marriage defeat in North Carolina. You know, President Obama risks alienating certain voting blocks, blacks and Hispanics among them, but I think he's taking a calculated risk that those voting blocks are really probably not going to peel away from him in large numbers as a result of his stance on gay marriage. I mean, I don't think this is necessarily a profile in courage. I think it's a profile in political calculation. You know, we've seen the stories recently about how President Obama has let down those who worked so hard for him 4 years ago, and that includes the youth vote, that people aren't happy with where he's been in the last 4 years. So, you know, what better way than to come out in support of gay marriage to bring them back to the fold? You know, it also means campaign money. I mean, just after the announcement, President Obama raised $15 million in a fundraiser at George Clooney's house. Obviously, the Hollywood crowd likes to hear this kind of talk, and they responded in kind.
What do you think, Ed Falone? Was this a calculated political move by the president, or was it North Carolina's vote, Joe Biden's comments that preceded him?
Well, I mean, if you listen to the president, what he talked about was the evolution of his thinking, and he talked about his daughters and how his daughters didn't understand his position on it. And I think that, you know, to my mind, he says it was a natural evolution, and I give that credence. I don't think he's dissembling, because I think that reflects what a lot of parents, people of his generation are going through. You know, they've got children who are asking questions about their stance on the issue, and they're rethinking their position. Much like, you know, perhaps my parents or grandparents had similar moments on race relations. Yes, there's a little bit of a political calculus here. There has to be. I mean, he's obviously in a re-election campaign. He's not going to take a position that's political suicide. But it's not necessarily clear that this is going to be a net gain for him. And certainly in some battleground states, it may actually work against him. So I think there is a little bit of courage here. You know, what's interesting to me is that it's a generational shift. Even in North Carolina, which passed this amendment, the backers of the amendment purposefully scheduled it for a spring election with low turnout because they were worried that in the general election in November it would fail. So what you have here is even the backers of these proposals recognize that the tide is changing generationally on this, and it's really just a matter of time.
Let's take a Larry in Eau Claire. Hello, Larry.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, go ahead.
I don't agree with the comment that that gentleman just made. I believe there's no credence on the president taking his position. I mean, let's face facts. He's a typical Democratic nominee that waited until he got the poll numbers to see what was popular, and now he's taking a clear political position on it. I don't believe it's courage. I don't believe it's credence. He's doing it in a calculus way for his reelection. And that includes the vice president also. When he was elected in 2008, he gave mixed positions on that subject, and then all of a sudden, 2012, he's clear on it. I disagree with that. And it's a typical, I believe, this president in the last 4 years done nothing but separate this country. And I think he's going to continue to do it because I believe he could outrun on his record.
All right, Larry. Do you agree with Larry Chrislotto?
Well, I certainly think he's on the mark, you know, about gay marriage and the thought that was put into it. I mean, I think there's a lot of credence to that. You know, this idea that President Obama had his hand forced by Joe Biden making, you know, a Biden-esque remark, I think is overblown. I think this was much more of an orchestrated effort than the administration would have you believe. It is coming in an election year, and I think that he did look at the numbers and say, this is a net gain for me if I'm able to embrace this. You know, the voters now in 29 states have approved, you know, constitutional bans on same-sex marriage. The voters in those states have spoken out, as they should have done and are able to do. And, I mean, we can go back and forth till we're blue in the face on issues of fairness, but I think that the issue is now being properly dealt with at the state level. Now, you know, as a nation, surveys are showing that attitudes are changing. Back to Ed's point, that really right now Americans are pretty much evenly divided on this, but that the trend is that the support for gay marriage is growing, and that it, you know, may well be a generational shift. We're just not there yet as a nation. But back to the caller's point, yeah, there's clearly calculation here, and anybody who says it's not is incorrect, frankly, for lack of a better word.
Let me quickly have you both respond to another story in the news this week. Mitt Romney apologized after the Washington Post ran a story this week that said while in high school or in prep school, Mitt Romney bullied a classmate in part because of the student's presumed homosexuality. And here's Mitt Romney apologizing.
Back in high school, you know, I did some dumb things, and if anybody was hurt by that or offended, why, obviously, I apologize. But overall, high school years were a long time ago, and I'm glad I've got some good friends in those years.
He does not recall the specific incident that was detailed in the Washington Post article where he and a classmate apparently pinned down this this boy and cut off his long blonde hair. Ed Filone, is this much to do about nothing, too?
Well, I mean, I think this is an example of pure politics. I mean, the president making a statement on policy is and his evolving view on it is what, you know, presidents do. But this is a pure campaign tactic to dredge up an old event from someone's youth. Put it into the media in a way that makes that person, a candidate, look very bad to key demographic groups, those who support gay rights and I suppose women in general who are very concerned about bullying and these issues. It's a lose-lose for Romney, but it is just a pure political tactic.
Mm-hmm. Chrislotto?
Well, sure, you're digging up the dirt from decades ago. It's timed, interestingly enough, to drop right at the same time that, you know, that President Obama makes his announcement about same-sex marriage. I would call that timing suspicious. You know, it's a hit piece. It's a political hit piece. You know, I think it's interesting as you read the coverage that's coming out since the initial blast, it's interesting because then you start to see the nuances in the story. Now, members of the family of the boy who was allegedly, you know, bullied, they're poking holes in the story. I mean, members of his family, the Lauber family, you know, we don't know who, you know, John Lauber can't speak to the event. I mean, he died several years ago. So, you know, I agree with that. I mean, I think it's a cheap political shot, no matter what went down. And if Mitt Romney was involved and did something like that, it was a dumb, terrible thing to do. And something that deserves to deserves Mitt Romney's apology. There's no question about that. But there is, again, a very strong political element here. Everything is kind of timed to coincide to knock Mitt Romney off his pedestal this week.
Chrislotto and Ed Filone are our guests this week for The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time now for the Week in Review quiz. This week, British researchers reported a new theory on how dinosaurs could have contributed to global warming and possibly even their own demise. What is this new theory? If you know, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you about 5 minutes or so to guess or to call in your answer, and we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and you will receive an opportunity to win one of the books we featured on the program this week. So, how did dinosaurs contribute to global warming and possibly even their own demise? That's the Week in Review quiz. This is the Week in Review, talking with Ed Filone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Chris Lotto, former Communications Director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. And more news of the week to cover, including this week, longtime Republican Senator Richard Lugar lost a primary election to a Tea Party-backed conservative challenger. He lost in part because he was accused of being too moderate or being too bipartisan. What do you make of this, Chris Lotto?
Well, I think Dick Lugar lost in part because he was so out of touch. I mean, here's a guy who didn't even know what address was on his driver's license, questions about whether he even lived in the state that he represented. I mean, I think that there is something to be said for the idea that some people, treat this as a lifetime gig, and they really shouldn't. And I think Dick Lugar's the poster boy for, you know, it's time to clean house in some cases. And I think the voters of Indiana responded to that, that they feel, a majority of them obviously feel, that they deserve representation that's more engaged than what they were getting out of Dick Lugar. You could make the argument, obviously the Murdoch was a Tea Party-backed candidate. The idea that he's more conservative, you see more conservatives voting in primaries, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear that Dick Lugar lost because of Dick Lugar.
What do you think, Ed Filone?
I grew up as a teenager in Washington, D.C. There were a group of senators who were either, you know, moderate Republican or conservative Democrat, people like Sam Nunn, Dick Lugar, that, you know, regardless of your political affiliation, you could look at and say, you know, this is how the Senate should work. These are thoughtful people who are advancing the interests of this country. And now I look at the Senate, and I don't see those people anymore. And I think it's a real shame.
We wanted to also talk about a story that's leading NPR News this week, or today, I should say. The bank J.P. Morgan Chase is in the headlines this morning. A massive trade went bad, losing the bank over $2 billion. This is leading to some calls for stronger regulations to protect investors, and some being very nervous that there will be more regulations coming to banks. Do banks need more regulation in light of this news, Ed Filone?
Well, I think the short answer is yes, but it's a little too late. I think increasingly people who study financial regulation are concluding that the repeal of Glass-Steagall, which separated commercial banking from investment banking, and prevented, you know, huge losses in one sector from spilling over to the other, the repeal of that was probably a mistake. It introduced a great deal of volatility and risk into the financial markets. But I'm not sure you can undo that. You can't unscramble that egg. You can't reimpose that separation, because these financial institutions have now become so intertwined, you can't unwind it. So we have to figure out a way to prevent the entire economy from being infected by these wild trading swings, and no one's yet figured out a way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Chris Lotto?
Well, I mean, the initial reports kind of suggest that it's a case of bad judgment and serious mismanagement. It appears as though the bank bet on an economic recovery that did not come, and that they are paying the price for it. So, you know, is it a question of, do we need more regulation? I'm not sure that that's the answer. I mean, I think this appears to be, on the face of it, a business decision that went very, very bad.
There's some international news we also wanted to cover this week. Across the pond, European elections overturned governments in France, Greece, and elsewhere. Some are seeing this as a response against austerity budgets. Are there any lessons for us when it comes to government spending and austerity here in the United States, Chris Lotto?
Oh, yeah. And I fear that we're going to, in the Obama administration, embrace the wrong lessons here. It was a weird defiant embrace of socialism that went on in France while the European economy is a mess. I mean, you know, what does France do? They elect a new president who wants to raise the top income tax rate from 45% to a mind-blowing 75%. You know, I don't know who in their right mind thinks that raising taxes that much is a smart thing to do in the middle of a downturn. You know, I know there are plenty of Democrats in the U.S. who believe that raising taxes is the way to go right now. You know, it'll be interesting to see what lessons the U.S. draws from the French election. You know, France is practically begging for a spike in unemployment, and they're actively pushing their top money earners out of the country with this action. And you know, France, like the U.S., is not going to be able to just tax their way out of this mess. So hopefully the right lessons are learned, but I fear otherwise.
Ed Flon?
The right lesson is that economic policy should be influenced by economists and not by political consultants. We have a lot of evidence now, enough time frame to look back and ask, you know, why did the U.S. do better than Europe in recovering from the recession? And the evidence is that the difference is that we had the stimulus. If you completely cut government spending, what that does is it leads to higher unemployment, it leads to people spending less money. When people spend less money, private businesses have fewer customers, they can't grow, they can't expand, that dampens employment prospects, and you have this downward cycle where there is no impetus for the economy to start pulling itself out of a hole. So you look at the difference in fiscal policy between Europe and the U.S., the difference is that we had a modest stimulus that at least put a cap on the shrinkage of the government sector, and that allowed some time for the economy to get its footing and prevented this free fall in Europe. Is it too late now for Europe to kind of juice up the economy through government spending? It may be. They may have missed their opportunity, and I think that really is the lesson to learn, is you have to move quickly and you have to be willing to spend a little now in order to avoid much higher costs to the economy later.
Congratulations to Anne in Madison. She is the winner of this week's Week in Review quiz. She knew that this week British researchers reported a new theory on how dinosaurs could have contributed to global warming and possibly even their own demise. The new theory is methane emissions, or as we say here at Wisconsin Public Radio, dinosaur farts. Seriously, that's what the team of British researchers studied, the methane emissions of plant-eating dinosaurs in the Mesozoic era, and concluded that plant-eating dinosaurs called sauropods were likely producing 572 million tons of methane gas a year, which is more than five times as much methane produced by cows and their animals in modern times. So some stories in the media were claiming that dinosaur gas contributed to their own extinction, but scientists say that's media hype and is not exactly accurate, but it's still kind of funny. So anyway, we have just a minute to go. Chris Lotto, you're going to be busy at the Republican convention this weekend.
Yeah, heading to Green Bay this weekend, leaving today, and you know, looking forward to it. I think that people are going to be very fired up in the wake of this week's election, and I think you're going to see a huge turnout in Green Bay this weekend, and I think that you know, the next 3 weeks are going to be interesting, and I think that Republicans are fired up and ready to work on high turnout and getting the troops out.
Yeah, and Ed Flon, you're not going to the Republican convention, are you?
No, I'm staying home and grading exams.
Right. Well, I hope you both have good weekends. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ed Flon is Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Chris Lotto, former Communications Director of the Republican Party of Wisconsin. We'll have more on recall politics and the Republican convention, I'm sure, in our state capitol report on Monday from 7 until 8. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.